Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate 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 Vasudevaya.
So yes, we're going to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is. And we'll read a few verses this evening. Some from chapter 2, contents of the Gita summarized. I think we'll read verse 20 and verse 22, and then a couple of verses from chapter 8. This is in the context of the passing away of Mr. Mandela. I'm sure everyone here is aware, of course, and, well, actually, practically the whole world is aware. So, but to really get the perspective on what has happened and, in general, what does happen in such situations, we have to turn to Bhagavad Gita, we have to turn to the Vedic scriptures. Otherwise, we will not get a very clear idea, and not a clear enough idea, that is a fact. So, yes, let us begin with chapter 2, verse 20, then I'll read verse 22. Najayate mriyate vakadachyam. Nayamudvabhavatavanabhuya Ajo nitya shashvato yampurano Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Incidentally, I think I'll need some water if possible, please. Translation. This very important verse, try to listen carefully to the translation. So this is Lord Krishna speaking, and he's saying, for the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. So, just to briefly clarify there, Lord Krishna is making this like very foundational point in this regard, that for the body, there's birth, there's death, there's the process of aging, developing and maturing and then dwindling. And then death, these things are natural for the body, natural and completely unavoidable. I don't know if you learn British history, do you, at school? Anyway, 1066 in the year, there was a king called King Canute. Have you heard of him? You've wasted 25% of your lives. But not really. Up till that time, 1066, up to that time, it was thought that the kings had some, like, really very special divine empowerment. And, yeah, like they were pretty much on the level of God. So this king, Canute, he was the king. And he knew it wasn't true because he was the king. But But the people kept telling him that, no, no, it's true, you have this sort of empowerment. And he would say, no, I don't. So one day he told them, all right, take me down to the beach with my throne when it is low tide. Now, you're not beach-going people so much. You know what's the difference between low tide and high tide? Sorry. Okay. So when it was low tide, he had them take his throne down and put the throne down there, down by where the water went when it was low tide. And then he sat there. And he said, okay, I'm now going to tell the water to not come in. Because low tide, then the tide starts coming in. So he did that. But you know what happened, don't you? The tide came in and he got wet. And this was like a, what would you say? Anyway, it was just really a red letter day. It was just a turning point, seriously, in the understanding of kings. So for the body, our point here in this context is that for the body, you cannot change. You cannot change this process of birth, then gradual development, the aging process through childhood, through youth, then going into young adulthood, maturity, and then middle age, and then old age, which is the precursor to death. It is actually said in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a nice description, I think it's the 7th canto, where it's described these different phases of the development of the body are described as being personalities. So there is a personality of old age, and then there's a personality of death personified. And it is said that in the Bhagavatam, it says that as you go into old age, then that personality, what it means is, it is as if, and it may actually be, in fact, that the personality of old age embraces you. And, you know, just gradually, more and more firmly, until she's really embracing you, then you're really old. And her brother is death. And when she's just really embraced you to her heart's content, she hands you over to her brother. Here, take him. And that's there. So yeah. So those processes, you cannot really do so much about them. Of course, we know there's medical science, and they're extending the life expectancy of people in many countries like the America, Europe, you know, the really westernized countries. It's kind of 75, 80, in some places more than 80. Of course, in South Africa, it's not. I believe it's 45 and reducing because of AIDS. But anyway, so, and of course, their idea is, behind the scenes, the idea is that we will find the right medicines, and so people can just go on living forever. But it doesn't really work like that. The body ages, and you know, if you want to If you've ever met people who are 90 years old, 100 years old, and you see their physical condition, and often their psychological condition, then you think, boy, you know, you want to stay like that? And maybe then go on for an extra 100 years and become that much worse, proportionately worse. It's practically inconceivable. Actually, it is kind of inconceivable because material nature does not really allow it. So here then Krishna is saying that even though the body goes through these phases and they're completely unavoidable, but the soul does not. And the way Krishna puts it is, the soul has not come into being. In other words, we're living now. We, as spiritual persons, as souls, we did not come into being. If there were, perhaps, to be some new ones, they would not come into being. And there will not be any other new ones in the future. The soul is unborn, eternal, ever-existing and primeval. Not only no death, but no coming into being. So this is the soul. And what do we mean, the soul? What is the soul? Jeff, or oftentimes when people talk about the soul, typically in Christianity, they talk about how we have a soul. You have a soul. Like, you have a right arm. Am I right? Looks like it. You have a left arm. You have a chest. You have a head, couple of legs, hopefully some intelligence. Anyway, you got these things, and you got a soul, too. One of many things that you have, like possessions. But what Krishna is saying here in Bhagavad Gita is that it is not that we have a soul. None of you have a soul. Sorry. None of you have a soul. All of you are souls. Yeah. In Sanskrit, the term is Atma. Which we translate as soul. So we're all eternal, spiritual persons. But these bodies are not eternal at all, obviously, at least. You know, we've all aged to some degree, at least. And we've all had personal experience how these bodies are not eternal. We all had little children's bodies. And, you know, the majority of us, at least, we have adult bodies, basically, now. Some of us have somewhat older bodies. Looking around, it looks like I may be the oldest person here, I don't know. You know what happened the other day? I was in Port Elizabeth a few weeks ago. I went to have some blood tests done, and they gave me a 25% discount for being a senior citizen. Seriously. It was the first time it's happened. Won't be the last. So yes, it's something like the driver within the motor car. Motor car has many functions, but it cannot really function nicely without a driver. And then when the driver's there, the car can go and stop and turn, avoid other cars and follow a certain route and reach the destination. But the car, just the car, if you just tell the car, okay, please, meet you in Johannesburg. Car is not capable. It's only the presence of the driver which allows this to happen. Or it's also a type of example, it's not too bad, is that generally today people, the watches people have, are battery powered, generally. So here we are, watch is ticking away, but you take the battery out, watch stops. The whole mechanism is there, but the battery, which is the source, sort of, you could say, the source of vitality or energy for the watch, you take it out, and even though the watch has a very sophisticated mechanism, but without the battery, it just cannot function. So this is the situation. And as we were saying, and everybody knows, that Mr. Mandela passed away, and before him so many other people passed away. Just a few days ago, who was the man who passed away? Paul Walker, who starred, never heard of him. Good. Good on you. I like that. So, just, you know, interesting thing about him. He starred recently in a movie made in South Africa by a devotee. Did you know that? Yeah. You didn't know that? No, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's a very high level movie or what. Vehicle 19. You can look it up on Google, it's there. And it's produced, and the name is there, Mukunda Michael Deville, produced, directed, etc. He's a devotee, initiated devotee, South African. So anyway, such is life. A few days ago it was Paul Walker has died. Oh no, it's just a disaster. It was all over the news. Now I think it's pretty much forgotten, at least by the greater world, because Mr. Mandela was a much bigger person. But this is what has happened, that the body, sooner or later, Mr. Mandela's body was 95, Paul Walker's body was 30, 40, whatever it may be. But he got into, you know, his body just got smashed to the point that it just became unable to function. These bodies have their limitations, one way or the other. So the body just gives out, just like your watch gives out, just like your car gives out after some time. These bodies are machines. But we're the eternal person within the body, and we are learning our consciousness and our life to the body. But just like the watch, when you take the battery out, then the watch just stops. It doesn't stop, you know, after an hour or something. It just stops. So when the soul leaves the body, taking with it its life and its consciousness, the body just drops dead. Yeah, so this is what death is all about. And I read some time ago, actually, someone asked the question, what about when a person is in a coma? It means, you know, some people go into comas for years, apparently. So what does that mean? What it means, according to Vedic literatures, is that that person has particularly complex karma. All the different activities they did, many good, many bad, and all sort of very mixed up. And the Yamadutas and Yamaraj, the agents of death, who actually figure out where the soul should go after the soul has left the current body, now it's got to go into a next body. So they have to figure out which body and how to prepare the person for that body. But in such a case, when a person goes into a coma, the idea is that Yamaraj and the Yamadutas, they cannot decide where he's going to go. So he's put into a coma, which is like suspended animation. Technically alive, you know, at least the heart is beating, breathing is going on. But effectively not living. Totally inactive and just in a hopeless position. So anyway, let's go on and read text 22 of chapter 2. Vasamsijaranani yata vahaya navani granati nalobrani tatashari rani vaharajanani anyani samyati navani dehi. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Again, it's a fairly simple example. We change clothes, hopefully every day, and take a bath, freshen up. So, I was reading a little while ago. Someone was being taken on a tour of Versailles. Have you heard of Versailles? You have? You sure? It's just outside Paris. It's big palace. Huge, really. Really extreme. Of the previous French royalty going back, 200-300 years, whatever. So, someone was being taken on a tour, and here's this room, and here's that room, and here's another room, and here's another room. And he said, where are the bathrooms? And the guide said, there are none. They did not use them. They used perfume. Anyway, those of you who are fond of eau de cologne, perfume, Chanel number 5, and so on, just know where it's all coming from. That's where it's coming from. Camouflage for the unfortunate natural odors of this body. Because along with growing, aging, and dying, the body very quickly gives off odors. Okay. Yes, so this example then is given of like we change our clothes every day. And today you're wearing, like we have here, yellow shirt. Tomorrow, what shirt are you going to wear? Red one, have you decided? You have a range. You have a red one. Have a blue one. Okay? So why don't you wear the blue one tomorrow? And then we can say that today, you're Mr. Yellow Shirt. And then tomorrow we'll meet you and we can say, oh, today you're Mr. Blue Shirt. But you're the same person, but just a change of clothes. So similarly, when the body dies and we change bodies, then it's just like, for the soul, for the eternal person, it's just like changing clothes. But we identify with the clothes. That, you know, this male body is like a set of clothes. Previous lifetime, what sort of body did you have? Of course, we don't really know. But for argument's sake, maybe you, for argument's sake, who knows? Maybe you had a male body. Who knows? You know the story, there's the story in Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, of Bharat Maharaj. And in his next life, in this life, he was King Bharat, big important man. But in his next life, he got the body of a deer. Yeah. He got the body of a deer. So, which brings us to, let us have a look now at a verse or two in the 8th chapter, which is taking the subject on into, you know, another stage of understanding. Like we said, the body dies, but we're all eternal persons. We will go on to another body, another lifetime. And what will determine what body we're going to get? What will determine what body Mr. Walker is going to get, and what will determine what body Mr. Mandela will get? How does it work? It's not just some sort of chance, haphazard, just who knows, close your eyes and there you are. No. It's extremely systematic. So Lord Krishna explains, this is chapter 8, I'll read verse 6 first, and then verse 5. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam, tyagya yante kalevara, tantame vaiti konteya, sada tad bhava bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, O son of Kunti, that state he will attain without fail. In other words, during the course of this life, our bodies develop, our minds develop. Our minds, when we were little children, maybe you can even remember, when we were little children, we played with toys. The little toy motor cars. There was a phase that me and my friends went through when we were, I forget what, but not more than 10. We collected these little motor cars. They were called dinky toys. And it was like the big thing. Do you have a Rolls Royce? Yeah. Wow, that's cool. I've just got a mini. And so we were into it. Into these toys. Like, girls play with Barbie toys. But now, if you were offered, what do you think? A dinky toy. Would you think, cool. No, really. This is really going to help me. No, now we have real cars. So, the body changes, but the mind changes too. The mind changes. The little the little mind of the child, extremely sensitive. You know, just a minor offense to a little child. Oh, crisis, panic, devastation. I was sitting on a plane, maybe a year ago or something, going to fly somewhere. And in front, in the row in front, was a mother and her little son. So they sat down, and little boy's by the window, he's looking out. Next to us, we were in some plane. Next to us was a red plane. Who's that? Anyway, one of the other companies. And little boy, looking out the window, said, "Mama, I want to go on the red plane." And Mama said, "Okay, that's all right, don't worry about it." And little boy said, "Mama, I want to go on the red plane." "It's okay, it's okay. Next time we'll go on the red plane." "Mama, I want to go on the red plane." And it was a total catastrophe. Wow. Terrible, screaming pain. Just imagine what it would take you to get you to scream in pain. He was screaming in pain. Oh, yeah. So children, you know, the mind of a child, very, very sensitive and often unreasonably and unnecessarily so and illogically so. But adults, we're not like that. I mean, not to that degree. So the body changes, the mind changes. As our desires develop, and as our lives develop, our interests develop. So Krishna is saying that how will your next body be determined? In terms of your state of mind. The state of mind you develop by the time the end of your life comes. So Krishna says, you will attain that state without fail. And then, last verse I'll read, it's verse chapter 8, verse 5. Antikale chama neva smaran mukva kalevara yaha prayati samad bhavam yati nasyatra samshayaha. And whoever, at the end of his life, quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So, if we remember Krishna, if we remember God, Krishna, at the time of death, then, well, that's what determines your next life, next birth, next body, what you are thinking of. So if you're thinking of Krishna, then Krishna says, you'll attain my nature. In other words, you will go to the eternal spiritual kingdom, because that is Krishna's nature. That is Krishna's realm. Of this there is no doubt. It's the same principle. Same principle. So you might think, someone might think, that, oh, that's good. So I will just carry on. And when the time of death comes, then I'll think, ah, yes, I must remember Krishna, and I'll remember Krishna. And there I go. Back home, back to Godhead. However, devotees and friends, it is not so simple. Or it is not so easy. Just like I think a number of you are studying, am I right? University, something like that. Yeah. So you know, You know what it's like. When the exams come, you got to really work at it. You got to just get down to it and just really get focused. And if you think that, okay, I will just have a good time, I will hang out at the cafeteria and speak to all the girls and just, you know, and just enjoy life and attend all the parties and smoke all the dukkha and drink all the vodka, etc., etc. And when the exam comes, then, okay, I'll just pick up my books and just, you know, spend 5 minutes, just study everything and pass the exam. What do you think? I don't think it'll work. I'm sure it won't work. You got to work at it. And actually, the best thing is, if you just work at it the whole time, through the year, you just follow everything and study. And then when the exam comes, you have to give some special focus. But you are prepared if you have been studying nicely during the course of the year. And this is all very straightforward, isn't it? I think this is not rocket science in terms of strategy for a student. This is just obvious. So same principle. We want to remember Krishna at the time of death. Then we have to work on it today, now. We cannot just postpone it and say, yes, you know, I'll go to the party today and tomorrow, then I'll work on my Krishna consciousness. We have to work on it as of now and on an ongoing basis, because you don't know when the time of death will come. You know, some people, like Mr. Mandela, he got warning, of course. For some years, apparently he was very ill, and 90 years old plus. That's such an obvious warning. But what about Paul Walker? You know what happened? Zipping along the road in a super duper motor car, which probably all of us put together couldn't afford one of, and then suddenly smash. Yeah. So you can't say that, when the time of death is coming, then I'll understand, okay, now I'll prepare myself. I remember when I was a little child, when I was about 10, I used to go to school on the bus. And one day, the bus was there. I was about to get on. And my friend was in his father's car on the other side of the road. And he called out, hey, come with us. So I thought, yeah, right. And without looking, I ran out across the road. It's a true life story. I just ran out. I just didn't look. And you know what? Next thing, I was waking up. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. That was like 7:30 or so. It was 11 o'clock. I woke up in bed at home. I got hit by a car. And I didn't know it. And even to this day, I don't know what car or... So you see, there's no guarantee that you're going to know when the time of death is going to come. And even if you do find out that, you know, maybe in 6 months if you get some cancer or something, but Will that be enough time? You know, particularly if you're dealing with a serious disease, will that be enough time? Will you be able to really get yourself focused? Better just start right now, you know. 12 minutes past 8 on December the, what is it, 6th, 2013. Get started if you haven't yet already. So in the case of Paul Walker, I'm actually intending asking Mukunda Prabhu. He must have known him. He directed and produced and I think wrote. He's sort of like a one-man show for that movie. I'm going to ask him, you know, what was Paul Walker like? Did Paul Walker know he was a devotee? I'm sure he must have. And, you know, try and find out some things. In the case of Mr. Mandela, you know, obviously he wasn't like a practicing devotee as such, but when he got out of jail in, well, just shortly after he got out of jail, in 92 sometime, I think it may have been June, yeah, I think it was June, he visited our temple in Chatsworth, Radharadnath Temple. He was not the president, but he was the leader of the ANC, so a whole big contingent of them came in many cars to accompany him, and he visited our temple there. And I happened to show him around. So we spoke to some degree. He was there for a couple of hours, I guess. And we went up into the temple room. And we went in front of Srila Prabhupada, and I offered obeisances as usual. Mr. Mandela bowed down and offered obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. At that stage, he didn't, I don't think, really know who is Srila Prabhupada. And maybe he was just doing it because he thought, you know, it's the thing to do. I don't really know. But for whatever reason, he bowed down. And then we went and sat down on the other side of the temple room. And I was talking to him about Srila Prabhupada and what he did, because in certain respects, well, in many respects, Prabhupada and Nelson Mandela had similarities. You know, they're both fighting, like, really, you know, on a campaign against somewhat different things, or maybe the same thing but on different levels, trying to help people change society for the better, and these types of ideas. Mr. Mandela, of course, on the political level, social level, and so on. Prabhupada, very much on the spiritual level. You know, even Prabhupada made the point that we don't really care what sort of government is in power. Not really, it's not such a big deal. And our movement is functioning. For example, our movement is functioning in China, which is not exactly communist, but it is totalitarian. I mean, it's definitely not communist, but it's certainly totalitarian, one-party police state, super heavy duty. So, but our movement's functioning there, and there are many devotees. Then in places which are very liberal, like Scandinavia, to some degree America's fairly liberal, the movement's functioning there. Then in a place like Singapore, which is basically a sort of fascist police state, our movement's functioning in Singapore too. and your different democracies and your socialist countries and all the sort of in-between different types of governmental arrangements the Hare Krishna movement is going on. Our business, in fact, when Prabhupada first met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his spiritual master, that was the 20s, and in those days, Britain was really controlling India completely. And Prabhupada was part of Gandhi's movement to overthrow the British. And Prabhupada met Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and said, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had been preaching, he'd given a class about how we got to become Krishna conscious. That's what we've got to do. So Prabhupada spoke with him at the end of, after the class, and Prabhupada said, but surely we've got to become free from oppression, from the British rule. Then we can become Krishna conscious. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta responded that no, Krishna consciousness is so important, so exclusively important, it cannot wait for a change of government or whatever, economic change, anything like that. It's so exclusively important. So Prabhupada was a real revolutionary like that. Big, big revolutionary. To change people and to change society one person at a time. To get people to actually become real devotees. And as you get more and more people who are actually real devotees, then the whole of society will change. So anyway, there we were sitting on the side, kind of facing Prabhupada on the southern side of the temple room. And I was explaining these things to Mr. Mandela. And Mr. Mandela looked at me and he said, how did he do it? How did he do it? Like in that sort of tone. Like a confidential sort of inquiry. How did he do it? And so, well, we continued explaining further. And he really appreciated Srila Prabhupada. And the fact that he really took a stand. In a different way. But he really took a stand to help the people to change the world. So anyway, after a little while, we went down to Prasadam, and I must say, Mr. Mandela, you know, it's always an extremely good sign. He really liked the Prasadam. And he asked for seconds on something. So that was good. Then he came back, when he was president, he came back in 94, end of 94, I think he'd fairly recently become the president. Came back to run around the temple. I wasn't there. But he had a very nice meeting, more prasadam, and very nice interactions with particularly Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And then in 97, sometime 97, we had the in Durban festival for the children of the Rainbow Nation. It was plus or minus 50,000 school children. We're all bussed in from all the schools around the Durban area. All big, major, pre-arranged operation. Into the, I think, King Stadium or one of the very big stadiums down there. In Durban, 50,000 of them. And it was a big program. Food for Life program and many presentations, and Mr. Mandela was there. He was the guest of honor. He gave a talk, and he was meant to leave after about an hour, but he stayed on for something like 4 or 5 hours. And afterwards, he said it was the happiest day in his life. And the devotees were everywhere, you know, on the stage with him and obviously organizing everything. And so I think he got a very positive impression from that. So, you know, it's difficult. Unless one is a real expert in karma, and you don't really get people like that nowadays, then it's difficult to look at a person and say, okay, what next life? Oh yeah, figure out what the next life will be. But if someone does some devotional service, takes prasadam, is favorably inclined towards Krishna consciousness, well, these are all very important things. Very important things. So we cannot say what the destination of either Mr. Walker or Mr. Mandela is going to be. But, at least in the case of Mr. Mandela, there's something positive there. Some positive things. Some very positive things. And if you're familiar with Srimad Bhagavatam, you'd know the story of Ajamil. Ajamil was a terrible person, just like a living, walking, breathing disaster on two legs, just too hopeless, violent, vicious, criminal, and truly, really like the lowest of the low. But he was in Vedic culture, and he married a prostitute. They had a child in their old age. Ajamil was at least 70 or more, and he and his prostitute wife had a child. They named the child Narayan, which is the name of the Lord. And so Ajamil was calling out, Narayan, come here, Narayan, come with me, Narayan, where are you? As parents do. Just really into his little child, Narayan. But Narayan is the name of the Lord. But at the same time, Ajamil was continuing with his serious nonsense activity. And then the time of death came. And he didn't know what to do. You know, just devastating experience. And then in the middle of it, he saw the Yamadutas. Watch out for the Yamadutas. They, you know, they're sort of like ghouls, hobgoblins. I think they're much worse than Tikalosh. I mean, they are just extreme. Like monsters, really. You know, sometimes I say, like heavy metal people multiplied by 10 minimum. I mean, really heavy, gross people. And they're coming to rip him out of his body at the time of death. So this is, it was bad enough anyway. Then he saw them. It was too much. He just lost control. He didn't know what to do. And somehow, spontaneously, he started calling for his son, Narayan. What little Narayan at the time was 5 years old. What little Narayan could have done against a gang of Yamadutas? No chance. But this was all Ajamil could think of. So he was calling out, Narayan, Narayan, help. And then the Vishnudutas came, the messengers of the Supreme Lord, and they confronted the Yamadutas. What are you doing here? You can't take this Ajamil. We are taking him. And there's a whole debate. You can read it in the sixth canto, maybe, I think, the third chapter. The Yamadutas and Vishnudutas debating what to do with Ajamil. Who should take him? And the Vishnudutas won on the basis that anyone who chants the holy names of the Lord at the time of death is liberated. So Ajamil was saved. And he didn't exactly go back to Godhead right then. He came back to life. And then he became a devotee. And a few years later he died finally. And then he went back to Godhead. So that example is given there in Srimad Bhagavatam, a very important example, that even if a person is just really terrible, but somehow there's a little Krishna consciousness there, then they may be liberated. At the very least, it's extremely beneficial for them spiritually. So, you know, we can't really make predictions. It would be irresponsible if we did. But certainly in the case of Mr. Mandela, he saw the deities. He offered obeisances to Prabhupada, appreciated Prabhupada, took prasadam a few times, at least three times. These are all big pluses. So for us, well, let's get serious. Let's get into it. Because who knows when your time will come. And if you're ready, then it can come any time. Doesn't really matter. Yeah. And King Kulasekhara, great devotee, he prays to the Lord. Let me die now while I'm young and my mind is focused on you. And, you know, my mind is clear and I'm chanting nicely. My Krishna consciousness is going really nicely. Let me die now. Then I'll go to you. Because when I'm older and my body breaks down and my mind is, you know, struggling, who knows what will happen? So I'm not suggesting, devotees, that you pray to die now. Because we want your association. But, actually Prabhupada said, a devotee should live every day as if it will be his last. Because one day it will be. And if you live every day like that, then because that means you'll be fixed in Krishna consciousness, you'll be really happy on the spiritual platform in Krishna consciousness. So life will be great, and the time of death will come whenever, and you'll be ready. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. So let's have a look at a few questions. Thank you. Do I think Nelson Mandela was some kind of a messiah because of all the good deeds he did? Messiah, generally the term messiah, is there for someone who really delivers people in a very specifically God-conscious way, like Jesus was the messiah. Prabhupada was a type of messiah. So I don't think that Nelson Mandela was a messiah in that sense. He must have had some good karma, though, because, you know, it's a very important point. When finally, you know, he got out of jail, then he became the president. But he didn't just turn around and have all the National Party executed on the spot. And, you know, some would say He had plenty of justification for doing something like that. But he tried to actually make a sort of somewhat fair society by material standards. That takes some mode of goodness. It really does. Take some mode of goodness, some clear thinking, peacefulness, and some deeper thought. Please explain the age of Kali Yuga and why its effects are so powerful to the human race. Well, it's sort of like there are four seasons. There's summer, or there's spring, then summer, then autumn, then winter. And it's just the way things work. It's the way the universe is set up to run like that. And, you know, here in South Africa we don't have a very bad winter. But you go to some places. I go to Siberia regularly. In some places in the summer, it's up to 40 degrees. It's really hot, really hot. But then in the winter, it's minus 40 degrees. 80 degrees range. Oh, and minus 40, I don't know if you've ever been at minus 40. My record is minus 46. And I can tell you, it's cold. So there, here you don't see it so much. But in a place like that, you really see it. So Kali Yuga's like the winter. Everything's deteriorated drastically. But then after, in a little while, things rejuvenate. Yeah. So that's how the universe functions. The universe functions in a cyclical fashion. Everything is cyclical. Even our bodies will be recycled because it's cyclical. You know, your nice looking face will be recycled in the future. Since the soul is in the heart, what happens when one has a heart transplant? Well, it's not actually in the heart. It's in the vicinity of the heart. But it's not directly connected to the organs, the physical structure. Yeah. So, you know, if you're tired with yourself now, don't think of having a heart transplant and, you know, from a nice person, and then you may become a nicer person. Sorry. Scriptures say the soul is neither born nor does it die. How does the soul decide that it will return in the material world? Also, if one's soul does not want to return to the material world, can one negotiate such a deal with the powers that be? If so, how does one's soul go about it? Well, that's, in a tongue-in-cheek way, a good question. The thing is, people are in jail. Why did they decide to go into jail? Well, they didn't decide. But they decided to commit a crime for which the natural result is meant to be that they go to jail. That's how they're in the jail, on the basis of desiring the crime, not on the basis of desiring to go into jail. So people are desiring to enjoy this material world. And they're trying and trying. And the result of that is you get so much karma for your good, bad activities, and then you have to take birth again in a particular body. So it works like that. So if you don't want to return to the material world, can you negotiate a deal with the powers that be here? When the Yamadutas come, just say, hey, listen, how much do you want? Can we give a donation to your Christmas fund? No, you don't negotiate like that with the Yamadutas. Tell them, look, I've got my credit card here. Can I put it on 24 months budget? No, the way you negotiate for to not take birth but to go back to Godhead, the way you negotiate is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, I think we'll finish. Oh, look, there's one. Oh, okay. No, that's it. Those ones are from the other day. Okay, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Okay.